This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, yesterday it was Russia and Iran saber-rattling. Today it's North Korea threatening to take action against the U.S., including a nuclear attack if the U.S. provokes them. Herman Pershner, president of the American Foreign Policy Council, is here to talk about that and the growing tension with Syria and Russia as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visits Moscow today. Also, Congress is on recess for Resurrection Week, but negotiations continue in an effort to move the repeal of Obamacare forward when Congress returns. Georgia Congressman Jody Heiss, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, is here with the latest. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guests, the topics we're covering, and a lot more at the website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, we archive all of the programs on Washington Watch, so if you missed something today, yesterday, or even last week, you can find it at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, at T. Perkins. All right, a lot is going on the global stage. Now, we've been talking about this for years, about how dangerous the failed policies of Barack Obama has made the world. I mean, his policies have made this a very dangerous world because there's been an absence of leadership. Well, President Trump has been busy in the midst of international conflict, ranging from North Korea, Russia, and Syria, and all of that's unfolding right now in real time. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is in Russia today. He's in Moscow. He is meeting with his counterpart there, and Syria is expected to be high on the agenda. Now, Tillerson's meeting comes just days after President Trump ordered a Tomahawk missile strike on a Syrian air base after the Syrian government used chemical weapons against their own people. Now, this has caused the Kremlin to say that the move had damaged U.S.-Russian relations. Here to discuss the Russia-Syrian relationship, as well as North Korea's threats of nuclear attacks, is Herman Pershner. He's the president of the American Foreign Policy Council. Herman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, a pleasure to be on the air with you.
I know you have long studied these regions of the world, and foreign policy is your expertise. We have a lot unfolding right now, do we not?
The world is very fragile.
Well, as you see this North Korea, this latest move, the United States sending a fleet, battleships in that direction, North Korea saying, hey, if we're provoked, we might use nuclear weapons against the United States. I think we may have lost Herman. We'll get him back here in just a moment. I want to find out if he thinks this is just idle talk or if North Korea is just crazy enough to follow through with what they are saying. I just want to go back to talk about how this is the result of the lack of leadership. I mean, look, the world is a dangerous place. It's an evil place. All right. We know that. This is the fallen man, okay? United States has, from time to time, we've gone into kind of an isolationist mindset occasionally, but for the most part, in the last 150 years, the United States has kind of played a leadership role in the nation, especially in the 20th century. We've played a key leading role. And as we stepped back in a confused foreign policy, if not an undermining foreign policy of the previous administration, we've created a very volatile and dangerous situation in many parts of the world. Herman, I know we got welcome back. Herman, I want to ask you this. As we see U.S. ships steaming toward the Korean Peninsula, North Korea giving threats, saying that they may use nuclear weapons. Is this idle talk, or are they crazy enough to do something like this?
I think anybody that tries to predict what Kim Jong-un thinks is skating on thin ice. There are some things we know, though. We know that China has stopped taking North Korean coal in a sign of disapproval. We know that China has abruptly reversed course and sent its top negotiator, nuclear negotiator, to Seoul to consult with the South Korean government. So something is afoot beyond just the U.S. ships steaming towards North Korea. The big question is, has China finally become fed up enough with North Korean actions that they're prepared to cooperate with the U.S. or to launch some action on their own? And it's something I'm watching rather closely.
Well, Herman, has not China been kind of positioning for maybe a regime change there? Were they not harboring the president's brother, who may have well taken position of president there in North Korea? Oh, I think we're having some difficulty here this morning. It must be the North Koreans are handling our phone lines today. You saw this in the discussions this past weekend with President Trump and the president of China. They were discussing trade, and that if China wants to have favorable trade policies with the United States, and by the way, this is in the sweet spot of Donald Trump when it comes to those issues. And he's because I've heard from discussed this with some of our friends in the White House that the president literally has negotiated certain things. Contracts with the guy. I mean, he loves negotiations. And so this is a sweet spot for him. And basically, China has been put on notice. If you want good trade policy with the United States, then you need to get your crazy cousin over there in North Korea in line. And so we may very well see that happening. That could be unfolding, as Herman was pointing out. They've stopped buying coal. And remember, North Korea is a very, very poor country. So any eliminate in there, and they're kind of isolated. Not many people want to do business with them. And so China is basically keeping them propped up. And if they lose that relationship with China, could very well force them in line, or at least they could slap them around a little bit. So it's going to be very interesting to see. There are, as I mentioned, there are U.S. ships headed toward North Korea, the Korean Peninsula. Nearly 4,000 U.S. and South Korean troops are engaged there in the in a South Korean coastal town. That's where they will be headed and where some are already at. Now, Donald Trump's top advisors are telling him assassinating North Korea's tyrant, Kim Jong-un, is the only solution to stopping the nuclear threat. Now, I think we have Herman back. Herman, I think the North Koreans are handling our phone lines today.
Well, I guess so. We're on a different line now, so hopefully this works.
As I was saying, the Chinese, as you say, it looks like they're responding possibly. I know the president was meeting with Chinese officials basically saying, if you want favorable trade deals, then you need to keep those folks in line over there in North Korea. Is that what we're seeing, the evidence of that already taking place?
Well, I think something is afoot, and I don't know that anybody that's not inside the Chinese government knows exactly what they're doing. I do know that President Xi of China has made some disparaging remarks, and in the official Chinese press, some of the press has been rather harsh on North Korea just in the last day or so. So the full court press is on. We'll see what comes of it. The fear, of course, is if there is a military action, the South may launch a nuke or even a full-scale invasion of the South, and that's a cause for concern. Seoul, as you may know, is very close to the North Korean border, and North Korean artillery could level a lot of that city before we could take it out, which we would do in relatively short order, but not without a lot of loss of life in the South.
Now, has China been positioning to maybe have a regime change in North Korea?
Yes, for a long time. You know, the half-brother of Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, was just assassinated by North Korean agents. And he had been the guest of China for many years, and China had been keeping him in reserve to take over in North Korea had there been a coup or a natural death of the current leader.
Let's go back for a moment, then I want to, before we run out of time, I want to get to Syria and Russia. But nuclear capabilities, what does North Korea have in the way of both the weapons and delivery systems?
Well, it's thought they have at least five atomic weapons. Delivery systems are rudimentary. We don't believe they have the capability to put the nukes on a missile, for instance. But do we know that 100%? No, we don't. And it's dangerous. And I think one of the reasons everybody's pushing now is we don't want to give them the capability to put nukes on a missile, which becomes a much harder problem to deal with.
All right, Herman Pershner, let's go to Russia. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in Moscow today. They're not happy about what happened in Syria. We continue to hear strong talk out of the Obama administration that Assad has to go. How does this play out?
Okay, well, a couple points. First, you're hearing some blowback from Russia. Well, we weren't at fault, and the Americans are just going to create another incident with gas. This is a typical Russian line. They have a long history, and I'm speaking of decades and decades, of blaming others for what they themselves have done or intending to do. So I hope none of your listeners get caught up in the Russian charges, which couldn't be more bogus. Russia has been told by Tillerson that he's there to talk about Ukraine and he's there to talk about Syria, but he's not going to mix the two up. They have to be treated as separate issues, and that was reassuring, to the Ukrainian government. And I note also that Tillerson called Poroshenko, the head of Ukraine, prior to making the trip to Russia to let him know that he wasn't going to go there to sell Ukraine out.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how the Trump administration handled this, because I think you've seen the Obama administration sidestepped, if not facilitated, the implosion in these regions of the world as he failed to act. So now we have
absolutely diplomacy can't work if other countries believe neither your threats nor your guarantees, and the Obama administration had no credibility on either side. So this strike by Donald Trump in Syria is a step towards reestablishing credibility. And if you have credibility, then diplomacy and more peaceful means have a chance to work. Without credibility, it's the law of the jungle, and you end up fighting anyway often.
Good point. Herman Pershner, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Bye.
All right. Herman Pershner, president of the American Foreign Policy Council. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. It's not going to be easy to solve these problems. They weren't created overnight, and they're not going to go away overnight. We're going to talk more about that a little bit later. But next, joining us, Georgia Congressman Jody Heiss. Could we be close to a deal on the repeal of Obamacare? We're going to talk about that with a member of the House Freedom Caucus when we return.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. Go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
You know, if you see a huge group of people and they're all in line waiting to do something and they're all happy about it, don't you wonder, okay, what's going on? What am I missing here? Why are these people so excited? In this case, it's thousands of people doing the same thing. They're joining MediShare. MediShare members share each other's medical expenses. It's that simple. They've shared over $1 billion in healthcare expenses since 1993, so they can handle your healthcare expenses too. With MediShare, you get affordable options to fit almost any budget. For most members, MediShare is about half the cost of other healthcare programs. You should at least check into it. This may be one of those things you start doing and then wonder, why didn't I look into this a long time ago? What was I thinking? Don't miss out. You can find out more. Call 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, Congress is on a two-week recess. They left last Thursday night. And be home for the Resurrection Week, off next week, back in their districts, and then back to D.C. But a lot of activity going on because still some think, in fact, I was talking to somebody today, said, well, you know, I don't guess they're going to get to the repeal of Obamacare. I said, no. In fact, it was a reporter I was talking to, said, well, that's over. And I said, no, it's far from over. They are going to repeal Obamacare. It's going to happen. It has to happen. And one of the holdups, as there was a conservative, the conservative members from the House Freedom Caucus were not at a point of agreement yet. And it was because the acid test of success in repealing Obamacare is that in 18 to 24 months, premiums, the health care coverage, the premiums, will have to be lower. I mean, that's the only way that the American people will say, yeah, it worked. They repealed it. My cost of my health care that's been going through the roof has gone down. And there weren't some clear assurances based upon the way the replace was structured that was going to happen. So there's been ongoing discussions, and the word I'm getting is it looks very promising. But I'm going to get it from a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Joining us now is Congressman Jody Heiss, who is a member of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. As I mentioned, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, and he's from Georgia. Congressman Heiss, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, always great to be with you. Appreciate you having me.
Well, our good friend Mark Meadows said we're very close to a deal on health care reform. We're inching closer. How does it look?
Yeah, you know, negotiations are underway, and you were exactly right what you said just a few moments ago. We are going to strike a deal on this. Obamacare repeal and replace is something we ran on. We promised, and you know, our promises, our pledges matter, and we are going to see this thing through, and I'm very much encouraged with the negotiation process. It continues to move forward, and I think we're getting closer and closer every day to seeing a deal that is much better than the one that was originally presented. We're going to see premiums go down, and I'm excited that this continues to move forward.
So will there be a meeting of the Freedom Caucus prior to the House returning? I mean, will you guys be having a conference call to discuss this, or will you wait to get back on the ground in D.C.?
Yeah, you know, we had a conference call even, in fact, yesterday, just to try to keep all of us abreast as to what is taking place. As you mentioned, we're on recess. We're all doing district work right now. And there are a handful who are continuing to be personally engaged in the negotiations. And so we spoke just yesterday to keep us informed as to what's happening. And again, I'm just real encouraged that those talks are continuing, and it appears that we're getting closer to being able to land the plane in such a way that will fulfill our promises. And so I'm excited about that.
So does this, you know, being away from D.C. for a couple of weeks, does that help or hurt the negotiation process?
Well, on a personal way, it helps a lot. It's always good to get away from it. But, you know, I think it helps in a lot of ways, but it certainly has not slowed down the negotiations. As I mentioned, those are still taking place.
Right.
I left last week on a positive note, personally. And many of us, you know, I think it's pretty fair to say that pretty much everyone has been actively engaged in the negotiation process. At least it seems that way. I know I've been heavily involved. And when we left last week, there were actually some who were wanting to have a vote last week, feeling like enough progress was being made. And, of course, that wasn't really, we weren't there yet. We just can't push this thing. It's much more important than it is for us to get this thing right than it is to get this thing fast. And
right.
So I think it's appropriate where we are right now. I feel very confident that when we get back that we're going to see continued movement and hopefully get this over the finish line in the next several weeks.
So Congressman Heiss, you've got about 60 seconds left. What does the repeal and replace look like right now? What are the key components that have been agreed to?
The key components that were missing were primarily the insurance company mandate and the essential health benefits. Insurance companies were still going to be required by the government to offer certain benefits. That is not free market principles, and it will not drive the cost of premiums down. So we've been holding out for free market principles for the insurance companies. It looks like great progress is being made in that regard. Also, the high-risk sharing pools that will also drive down the cost dramatically. We're making great progress in that arena as well as overall regulations. So I think we're sitting in a good position where there's general agreement to push these things across the finish line that could drastically reduce the cost of premiums. And as you mentioned earlier, that's essential for this to get over the finish line.
Yeah, I mean, without that, there's no way to gauge success. I mean, that's what Americans are looking for. They're tired of their rates, their premiums going up, 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 and up. And you got to do something that's going to lower them. And you're absolutely right. It's going to be those free market principles that makes that happen. Not more government. It's less government.
Absolutely. And how can we even offer a plan that makes premiums go up? I mean, that's totally unacceptable. That's what we've been standing against. And I'm glad that it looks like we're going to win that battle.
Great. Congressman Jody Heiss, as always, great to have you on the program, my friend. Have a great resurrection weekend, and we'll talk to you when you get back to D.C.
Thank you, Tony, so much. God bless.
All right. Congressman Jody Heiss of Georgia. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. I am encouraged and I'm almost certain that we're going to see Obamacare repealed. And it's going to be replaced with something, and they're working hard, the Freedom Caucus, and I'm grateful for Mark Meadows and those that are working in those negotiations. And I had conversations on Friday with the vice president about this, and I'm optimistic. And there's give and take. There's true negotiations going on where I think in the end it makes it better. In fact, I think you'll see FRC will be scoring in favor. Most likely, we're still working on the details, but most likely scoring in favor, meaning we'll record the vote and say this is where we and our supporters stand. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Syria. I want to go to the phone line, so get ready. I'm going to be taking your phone calls here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Pretty surprising how calm stocks seem to be. The geopolitical tensions, if they are in fact tensions, are not really having much of an impact on the markets. We'll have to wait and see. Of course, the president is meeting with 20 of the top CEOs in the country to talk about jobs and infrastructure. I really wish that the president could stick to the core campaigning points that he made. Taxes, jobs, infrastructure, regulations, regulatory burden. I think that's where his sweet spot is. That's what he was elected to take care of. And maybe as he meets again with these CEOs, he'll get back on target. Small business sentiment declines. Now, it's still at extremely high levels, higher levels than it's been in the last 10 years. But nonetheless, it seems to be taking a bit of a pause right now. This is their index of uncertainty also rose a little bit. Nothing big, but small businesses still very enthused, but nonetheless, a little bit less enthused, at least for the month of March, than they have been since the election. Hopefully, that is a trend that's not going to last much longer. Janet Yellen seems to be taking her foot off the gas pedal a little bit when it comes to the potential interest rate hikes. And we could see her just sitting back and gradually raising rates based on whether the economy accelerates or deteriorates over the next few months.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. A Rasmussen poll released this morning shows that 57% of likely voters approve of President Trump's missile strikes against Syria. Now, it's interesting, you know, when it first happened, you know, there were no critics. Of course, now there's a lot of people, Democrats and some in the media, criticizing. I'd be interested to know what you think. Do you approve of President Trump's actions launching 59 Tomahawk missiles on a Syrian airbase? You know, you heard what Herman Pershner said earlier about how, you know, negotiations and diplomacy only works when they know you've got something to back it up with. You know, the carrot works when you got a stick. And I don't think he was looking for the opportunity, but he responded. And I have to say, I think he passed the test in terms of how the president has responded thus far in this huge mess that he has inherited from Barack Obama. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234 is the bat phone. Yes, you can call me. I want to know what you think. Do you agree? Do you approve of President Trump's missile strikes against Syria? And we'll see if you're where we are in line with you know, the general population. 57% of likely voters approve. I venture to say that it's probably going to be higher among our educated, informed audience of listeners who understand that this is a dangerous world. And you know, it's interesting. And I did not agree with the kind of the nation-building emphasis of the Bush years. And there's a reason for that. I don't think you can go in and take the principles of democracy, of our republic, into the Islamic world, which is what we tried to do in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't think it works. Because there's not, the soil is not in, it's not conditioned to allow democracy to take root. And that's why, that was a lot of the problems with the policies, foreign policies of the Bush years. But you go back to Ronald Reagan. Remember Reagan? He was president when I was in the Marine Corps. And in fact, I was in the Marine Corps. I had some friends in Lebanon when Marines were murdered with an Islamic truck bomb. And they hit the barracks. And what did President Reagan do? He sent the USS New Jersey to fire its guns at various targets. The every time that Americans were hit, Libyan terrorists bombed a Berlin nightclub, killing American soldiers. And we didn't send troops into Libya. He ordered airstrikes and sent a clear message to Gaddafi. He used military strength, but he didn't get us on the ground there, knowing that we could not take the principles which we operate into those countries and change their, their countries and their governments. Of course, we saw what the Obama administration did when they destabilized those regions by, taking out one dictator and putting in another one. It's better just to teach these bad people a lesson and keep them in line in many cases. And that seems to be the same path that Donald Trump is going down. All right. 866-372-7234. We're going to spend the rest of the time on the phones. Let's go to Frank in Kansas. Frank, welcome to Washington Watch. Frank, go ahead.
I was thinking about what's been going on with Syria, and I'm old enough that what Neville Chamberlain did versus what Winston Churchill did ought to be a piece of history that, teaches us things. When you placate somebody that isn't going to listen anyway because they want to dominate, all you're going to end up doing is just giving away stuff until you get your back up against the wall, and then maybe you can't get out. And the only reason that Great Britain survived is because the United States entered the war.
Correct.
Otherwise, they would have been done.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Frank. Unfortunately, today, we're not teaching history. Young people don't know history, and even college students are not getting the proper amount, the proper dosage of history. And it's so true. I mean, Chamberlain gave away land, gave away countries, was willing to allow the Nazis to increase their stronghold in Europe. Didn't want confrontation. And I think it was a combination of the leadership of Winston Churchill, who was willing to stand up against all odds, even against his own, his own government at times. And the Americans that came in after the British were just hanging on by a thread. But you're right. Appeasement does not work. Well, it doesn't work, period. But certainly with dictators, with tyrants and terrorists. They respond to power, legitimate use of power. Okay, folks, we've got the phone lines are full, so if you can't get through, keep trying. You'll get a line in a moment, but don't go away. Keep hanging on. We're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back and go straight to the phone lines. We're going to go to Texas when we come back to Sid. All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Join the conversation, 866-372-7234.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
News travels fast and it's constantly changing. Keep up on onenewsnow.com. It's a news site featuring the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world. OneNewsNow.com has well-researched articles from a conservative evangelical perspective with hot topics of concern to Christians right now. Get the full story when you visit OneNewsNow.com.
Judy Goodell and her husband set up a charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation.
What we love about it is that it represents stewardship principles that we feel strongly about. So we got very, very excited about this opportunity.
With a charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation, an AFA supporter can guarantee a permanent monthly income, as well as supporting the American Family Association for years to come.
We do feel convicted about really praying about all that God has really blessed us with. And so many people we know just want to leave it all to their kids. And we know the danger of that. And so we just are really just trying to pray through it, and God gave us great confirmation as we prayed that this would be a good use of the Lord's money.
Find out if a charitable gift annuity is right for you at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website is tonyperkins.com. And again, if you'd like to be a partner with the Family Research Council, which is the organization that brings you Washington Watch each and every day, go to tonyperkins.com and partner with us. Be a part of the extended Family Research Council family. Again, that website, tonyperkins.com. All right, 866-372-7234. And a poll, a Rasmussen poll released earlier today, says 57% of likely voters approve of President Trump's missile strike against Syria. So that's what we're talking about today. I want to know what you think. We're going to go to Texas, where Sid is on the line. Sid, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you, Pastor Perkins. So,
well, what do you think?
I just want to add some more support to that poll that, yes, I did vote for President Trump, and I do support missile strike, but it does come with some conflict. I do think that any loss of life is unfortunate, and especially when we're acting in defense of those who didn't even have a chance from the sarin gas attack. But I think ultimately that if we were to, like what you were talking about yesterday, force Assad out of power, that may pose a greater threat than what we initially had done in the first place with this missile strike. So ultimately, I just think that the missile strike was a good thing in terms of the fear of America being back on the table. And I just think that, you know, that's fueled by our fear of God. And I don't want the world thinking that we won't act in defense of those who need it. Not all acts, but something this drastic. So, yeah, in short words, yeah, I support it.
Yeah, good point, Sid. Thanks so much for the call. There is something to be said, and you've got to think about this very, very carefully when it comes to a regime change. You know, Assad has shown himself to be a very bad actor, but we had General Boykin was on last week. I think he was on a couple of times last week. We were talking about it. And one thing that historically under Assad's reign, you know, Christians have not been targeted and persecuted. They've been protected, and they've been able to live freely. So they've done some things, right? Which is really, even under Saddam Hussein in Iraq, there were certain freedoms that were extended. We've seen Gaddafi, you know, he got out of line every now and then. And as I mentioned earlier, when Ronald Reagan dropped a few bombs on his house, he straightened up. But look what happens when you lose one of those crazy guy, somebody else that's even crazier sometimes comes in behind him. I mean, that's what we've seen in Libya. That's why the Middle East is in such turmoil right now with some of these bad actors that have been replaced with more bad actors. So it's better to scare a bad actor into being a not-so-bad actor. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Missouri where Dennis is on the line. Dennis, welcome to Washington Watch.
I would say that, you know, Trump's response was measured and there's not much loss of life, so I think that was a good thing. I would point out, though, that if you go back to Obama, he did draw that red line, but he asked Congress to approve him going and attacking Syria, and they did not do that. And that was the Republican House of Representatives, too. Now, Trump, at the same time, back in 2013, when there were many more gas attacks, was vociferously telling Obama not to attack Syria, that it was a no-win thing. And I must say, if you go back even to Bush, he said the whole war was going to cost less than $100 billion, and now it's going up to $4 trillion, which you divide that by 319 million Americans, we are spending quite a bit. I mean, per person, if you have a family of four, divide 319 million to 4 trillion, and it'll shock you how much money we're paying for that. Now, if you look at Trump, now, he did a measured response, and I have to say that was a good thing. But the week before, he had told them through Tillerson, that said, look, Assad has to be, whether he's king or not, is up to the Syrian people. And that one may argue that he encouraged, not intentionally, but by saying that, Assad may have said, well, I can gas now. Now, whether you can't really say that's a tit for tat, but, that can be the thing. And the other thing that the gentleman said, and I totally agree with, is you knock these people out. Sure, they're terrible people, but look what happened to Iraq. We killed hundreds of thousands of people, and what did we get? We got a section of Kurds, you got Sunnis, you got the Shiites, and now the country is controlled by Shiites who are back behind Iran. And so we spent going on $4 trillion for what?
Right.
You're getting into a quagmire, and I don't think it's worth it.
True. That's why I think these limited strikes where we're not committing personnel, we're not trying to, we're not nation building. We're not trying to turn these Islamic countries into democracies because it just doesn't work. It failed in Iraq, failed in Afghanistan. And you're right. We're it's hard to say that we're any better off today than we were back then, especially after 8 years of the Obama administration. And, of course, Obama's red lines quickly became pink lines. And I think Trump has made very clear that he will back up what he says. And I think that's why you see Russia upset, you see North Korea upset, because they don't want to be next. How far will the Trump administration go? I don't know. I think we can do a lot more when it comes to these types of our technology is good when it comes to the missiles. I mean, we're still upping that technology, as long as we're not committing ground troops. That becomes a lot more complicated because our military is, as we've talked about frequently, is not in good shape. Sequestration has drawn down a lot on our material, the equipment, the training, and then, of course, the morale under the social experimentation that took place for 8 years under the Obama administration, which continues. I mean, that stuff's, as we were talking with someone yesterday who's in the Guard saying this stuff's now just getting down to that level. It's got to be reversed, and we've got to be intentional about that. It's not going to happen on its own. All right, let's go to Texas, where Nelson is on the line. Nelson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, hi, Tony. Yes, I do approve of what the president did, and hope they actually obliterated that entire airstripe, and I hope they interview Mr. Obama, and he actually went on national TV and said that they emptied Syria of all chemical weapons. I wonder what he has to say about that. That's about it.
Yeah, we know that's not the case, and of course Russia has a part to play in that because the Obama administration kind of left it up to them, but of course they had a little more flexibility and they didn't have anybody watching, so we know that did not happen. So we'll interesting, very interesting times, and all the more reason, folks, that we need to be praying. When I was with the vice president on Friday, had the opportunity to pray for him and for the president. The president wasn't there, but I prayed for him. We need to be praying, Lord, to give them wisdom. These are very, very difficult decisions. And, you know, it's not checkers. This is like a chess game. Because you have to anticipate what this one move may lead to three or four other consequences. So, very important they get it right. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Missouri, where David has been patiently waiting. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm probably in the minority in that I'm a millennial who actually supports the airstrike on Syria. I just think that if we're going to look at history, the United States has been put in a position, not chosen, not something that we seem to have looked for or went searching for, but to be a world power. And so when things like these chemical warfare weapons are used, the world looks and then they watch to see what we do. And when we don't react, or we say we're going to act and then we don't act, I think it shows that we're not really the world power that the world expects us to be. And for whatever reason, God in his sovereignty has placed us in a position to act in these situations, and it's our responsibility with that power and that privilege to protect people from getting harmed. And so when the world powers that critique us now look at us, we can just simply say, you know, we didn't ask to be a world power. We were put in this position, and it's our job to make sure that when a child is suffocating to death from chemical warfare, that we go out and we protect people. That's just something that's fallen to our lap and our responsibility.
Let me ask you this, David, have you served in the military?
No, sir, I did not.
Okay, all right, I just wanted to check because you said you were a millennial and you support this. I actually think there's probably more millennials out there that are supportive of this simply for the reasons you laid out. When we saw this, I believe if I recall correctly my conversation with the vice president, he mentioned the president's comments about the children. And the president has repeatedly said that over and over and over. I don't see how you could see what took place and unfolded and what happened to these children and say we don't have any responsibility there. And again, I mean, proportional in the response that we took. David, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate the call. Kind of reminded me of... he was talking about if we're going to be a world superpower, but yet we don't back anything up, we're going to lose the influence that we have. As I said, maybe we didn't seek it, but this is where we are as a nation. It's really kind of like a parent. You know, if a parent says, you know, don't do that, but then every time a child does it, they just kind of turn their head and ignore it. Guess what's going to happen? The kid's going to keep doing it. In fact, he's going to start doing worse things. Sometimes you got to lay down the law and enforce it. You know, if a king listens to lies, the proverb says, you know, all the kingdom becomes wicked. So if we're influenced by that, if we don't take actions, if we're not decisive, evil will spread. It's going to happen. All right, let's go to Arkansas, where Walt is on the line. Walt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate taking my call. I think the proverb you just said was very poignant. It I appreciate the intent behind his what Trump did in terms of trying to quell what he viewed was the threat to the people in Syria. The problem is, I believe he is listening to lies as well, because the intelligence community is not on his side, which has been proven over and over again. You know, back in 2013 and 14, you know, when the first round of chemical strikes happened and it was blamed on Assad, a video evidence surfaced showing that it was a false flag and that it was, in fact, the rebels who performed it out, you know, trying to get the world to turn against Assad. I believe it's the same case here, and we are not getting the truth. In any event, the history behind the wars that we've been drawn into follow the same pattern, where whether or not it's a false flag attack of some sort, whether it was the Gulf of Tonkin for Vietnam, you know, shooting at shadows, that never happened, or the Lusitania, where it was set up for the Germans to blow it out of the water, there was full knowledge and intent there so that we would be drawn into war. And the generals in 2014 said so. They said, do not institute a no-fly zone. They said this to Hillary Clinton. If you do, you'll start a war with Russia, and in turn, a world war. So they knew that Syria was going to be the spark that could start a war with Russia, and that is kind of what gives me pause about this latest round of airstrikes.
So you think that because of the issues that have been there with the intelligence community, that do you think it was knowingly, are you suggesting that there was knowingly false information sent, or it was just faulty intelligence?
Absolutely. I think they do it with full knowledge. There are a lot of people who do not have America's best interests in mind operating in our government under a globalist heading.
Trying to set up this confrontation. All right, I get that. I don't necessarily agree on this case. I think the evidence was pretty strong, but you know, you're right historically that we have to be very, very careful that the intelligence we have and you know, our human assets when it comes to intelligence have not been really strong, and you cannot do everything with satellites and other forms of intelligence gathering. So there are certainly holes, as we've seen, in our intelligence community and gathering. Appreciate the call. Sorry, folks, we're out of time. Not going to get to the rest of the calls, but Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and we'll have something else to talk about. I don't think we're going to see the challenges on the international scene go away anytime soon. I mean, there is a lot happening, and this stuff's not going to be resolved quickly. It's going to take a lot of time. And again, let me remind you to pray for the president, that he would have wisdom, that he would get the right information, that the information that is shared with him would be accurate so that he would make wise decisions that are in the best interest of America and our friends. Folks, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. Ephesians 6, you've done everything you can do when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.